Today, I'm in the city of Granada enjoying a coffee with my guest, Molly Sears Picavi, now full-time travel writer and blogger on all things Spain. You mentioned home, Michael Bublé, Molly. You were brought up in Nottingham. That's right. You were born and bred in Nottingham.
That's right.
And you still get this urge to go home. I mean, have you still got family in Nottingham?
Yeah, that's right. I have my parents and my brother. They're all back in Nottingham.
Do you find it difficult being apart from them, or are you so embedded now in your life in Spain that this is your home, and Nottingham is, you haven't got that same affinity, or do you still have a very strong affinity with Nottingham?
No, that's right. What you said about this is my home now, it really is my home. I've been in Granada for 11 years, and I've been in Spain for 20. And that's a really long time. And when I go back to Nottingham, I want to see everybody. I want to say hi. I want to make sure everybody's okay. And get kind of, there's certain things that I like to do, like I have a ritual. There's certain things that I love to do when I get back home. But when I've been there 2-3 days, I'm already wanting to come back. There's a lot of things that don't quite seem right to me anymore that I miss. I can't bear not to be with fruit. There's so much fruit here. And when I go home and see the price of the fruit and the poor selection, it absolutely kills me. I'm not used to it. I'm probably spoiled, some would say. But you really get used to these things. The food here is ridiculous, and you don't notice it, especially until you go home. But I feel completely at home here, and I have done for a long, long time.
Have you got nationality here now?
No.
Does Brexit worry you then?
Well, yes and no. It worries me, but at the moment, we don't know really what it means. Nobody does. So I'm just kind of, I'm just letting them get on with it. And when they decide what's going to be done, then I will decide what's more convenient for me. But I think with the way I've kind of run my life since I moved here in 20 years ago, I will have no problem in becoming Spanish. Like, the authorities won't have any problem in converting me to Spanish, because I've been a taxpayer here for 20 years. I've been permanently based here for 20 years. I own a property here. I speak fluent Spanish. And I've also had the padrón. The padrón is where you list on your municipal register that you are physically living here. I've been on the padrón in Spain for all those years as well. So I've got a lot of things to back up my case if I wanted to be Spanish. I would prefer not to renounce my British nationality. But if they put it in a way that it just makes sense, I'm going to have to do it.
So do you consider yourself to be more Spanish, more European, or more British these days?
Well, if you'd have asked me that a year ago, I would have said European. But now I don't know what that means anymore. The thing is, I am English, I'm British. I'm mixed up. I don't know. I can't answer.
Would you ever want to go back to the UK, do you think?
I don't think so. I don't think so. No. I've got used to life here. I've got used to being out on the street all hours, and there's so many things that I'm used to here. And even though I haven't got children, the family environment that there is here in society, of looking after old people, and I don't know, just the values here, I've got so used to that. And then when I read things like in the UK, things what's going on, it really saddens me. And I mean, I'm not saying everything here is a utopia and everything there is bad, not at all. But the things that I see in society, they really sadden me.
You have become quite an expert at social media. I mean, did you know much about social media when you picked it up, or is this something you've learned by osmosis and it's evolved with the blog?
Yeah, it kind of has something that's evolved. And I've always been very keen to always be looking up to the next level. So if I'm on social media and I've got 1,000 Twitter followers, I'm already thinking, who do I know who's got 5,000? What do they do? And I'm trying to kind of work out, observe, and work out what they're doing. And so always looking at the next kind of step. I'm self-taught. I'm one of these, I can't, I can't sit down in a class. I'm not very good at sitting down in a classroom and being talked at and looking at books. But if you say, find out how to do that yourself, it might take me a long way. It might be a tricky way. I might not go the fastest way, but I will get there. I'm like a dog with a bone. Yeah. Really, I will not take no for an answer. So I think kind of that sums me up with social media. If I decide I'm going to learn something, I will get there in the end. And I spent a whole summer trying to work out Instagram. A whole summer. Literally, I didn't do anything else. When I say nothing else, I mean I didn't write on the blog so much. I didn't write on Facebook so much. I just spent the whole summer focused on Instagram.
And have you cracked Instagram?
Yeah, more or less. Well, I say yes, more or less, but then Facebook bought Instagram, so then all of that's gone out the window and things are changing constantly. So you've got to be kind of on top of it, but I'm also learning not to get obsessed with it, because one day you can just lose, I don't know, 400 followers because they do something, like they clean up some spammy accounts, or they block some people or whatever. Instagram just do something on their machine and it all goes haywire. So you can't be kind of too obsessive about it. It's kind of looking at the progress over a period of time, over several months, rather than going, oh no, last Sunday I had so many and this Sunday I've lost some. You can't obsess with it. And yeah, there are people doing lots of tactics, people buying a lot of followers, people doing really weird stuff. So I think it's the same as what I was saying before. It's the balance of putting out good photos, putting good captions that people are interested, staying true to myself. Because I know, for example, Paris is a really good Instagrammable city. But I'm not going to go to Paris to fill up my Instagram because I'm talking about Spain. So it's remaining true to yourself and keeping balance.
Time for your fourth piece of music, Molly. What is it this time?
Yes, this is a piece by Chan Bao that really sums up summer.
Molly Sears, Picavi travel blogger, is my guest today, sharing her life story, and we're sitting in a cafe in Plaza Bibrambla in the centre of Granada. Molly, so you were brought up in Nottingham. What brought you originally to Spain?
I was brought up in a little village called Underwood, which is between Nottingham and Derbyshire. I've got to say that, because I'm not from Nottingham.
Right.
Because that's considered posher, probably. Anyway. And what brought me to Spain?
So well, you're a country girl at heart.
Really, we're from D.H. Lawrence. It's mining villages. Yeah, my granddad was a miner. And he actually said to me that I should look for a job that wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And currently I'm actually working in tourism and I'm often paid to travel. So I think I've taken my grandfather's words to the extreme. Anyway, why did I move to Spain? Well, when I was at GCSE level, my school was teaching French and German, but I just a fluke one year, the German teacher wasn't available and we had a Spanish teacher. So I did GCSE Spanish. It seemed that I got on really well with the language and seemed to progress kind of quite fast. And the teacher's like, oh, you should go on the school exchange. So I went on the school exchange. I was 12, whereas all the other pupils were maybe 13, 14. I was certainly a lot younger than the people on the bus when we went there. And I just got on really well with the family. I didn't hardly speak any Spanish at this point, but the family were lovely.
Where was the family? Where was that?
In Olesa de Montserrat, which is famous for the Black Virgin. It's got a church, mountains and a church, and it's very famous for the Black Virgin, and that's a day trip from Barcelona that a lot of people may have done. I went to Olesa and we got on really well, and the following year I went on a French exchange and that didn't go so well. We'll just leave it at that. And then my parents were like, oh well, you didn't have a very good time in the French one, why don't we do the Spanish one again, but instead of going with school, we'll just set it up between our families. And that's what we did. And we just got on, and my friend Sonia would come to us, and I would go to her, and we do it practically every year. And so, of course, my Spanish was improving. And this is just how it went. And then when I was older, I was working in Nottingham. I got a job, an office job. And I just thought, not, this isn't for me. I want to use Spanish in my job or in my life. And I started to look for work speaking Spanish somewhere in the UK. But, I mean, this is like 1990s, and it wasn't like now where everybody's got international departments with all different languages. It's just a whole different thing. And they said, oh, if you haven't gone to university and done Spanish, you won't get on. And it was just, there was like no hope.
Mm.
So I thought, well, maybe I could go to Barcelona and get a job speaking English. So I just turned it on its head, and yeah, and I went to Barcelona.
What did you do there? Did you teach, or did you actually just flung yourself in?
Well, at the beginning, this Catalan family I'd been doing the exchange with since I was 12. I mean, I'm now 21 or so. They took me in, as it were. They were happy for me to stay with them. They were in the city of Barcelona now, not in Leicester anymore, and. So I was staying with them, and because I'm the way I've been brought up, probably they were quite happy for me to live there rent free just with them and study. But I couldn't do that. I just couldn't bear it to live in somebody else's house and not pay my way. Just didn't wash. And so I went and I did nannying at the beginning. And then after a while, I think 6 months or so, my Spanish was getting a bit better. I went and got an office job. And then after that, after another period of like getting better at Spanish, then I got another office job, and that was at Agilent Technologies in the bioscience. So it was like step by step.
Yes. And what brought you down to Granada?
And then in Granada, I was in Barcelona from 1998 until 2006, so just under 10 years. And then I moved to Granada, and my boyfriend is from Granada, and so we moved here in 2006. I'd been in this corporate job for about 7 years or so, and I was a bit, yeah, it's like time to move on. I was a bit fed up, time to move on. And so I thought, well, instead of looking for another job in Barcelona, I may as well look for a job in Granada.
And was it easy to get re-established here?
Well, I think I just landed on my feet. I don't think it is an easy thing, but I just seemed to get lucky, or I don't know, somebody was looking down. I don't know what happened. But the first job I applied for was the job I got at Telefonica to set up this new centre of e-health. On the science park.
Yeah, I remember you telling me when we met a while ago that the first time you realised you were fluent in Spanish was when you were invited to give a lecture, and I think was that at university?
Yeah, that's
right. Was that
right.
Here?
Yes, in the Granada University in the law faculty, they invited me to do some classes, well, lectures. They were 2-hour lectures in Spanish about organising events in private companies. And it was then suddenly I had this light bulb moment. I'm thinking, I didn't go to university to study Spanish, but now I'm giving university lectures in Spanish. And I was like, oh my goodness, what's happened? It was really, yeah, just this moment when you realise how much you progressed. Because sometimes you just like with a daily struggle, because it really was a struggle at the beginning, because I didn't have anything to do with like foreign people when I moved to Barcelona. I was completely in a Spanish group, and sometimes you feel that you've lost your character, or like you can't have banter or jokes because your Spanish is limited, and so it's like your character doesn't come through. And I think you're a bit like a robot or something.
Yes.
Like, it's a bit mechanical, the way you speak. And that lasts for a long time. And so it's like for this long time, long period of time, you've lost your identity. It's really frustrating. And then when you have this, like, I say, light bulb moment where they've invited you to give a lecture in a Spanish university, you think, wow, how far have I come? You know, it was worth it.
Your fifth piece of music now, Molly, and what is it?
It's Jake Bugg and Taste It. He's an artist from Nottingham, and I think it really, really sums up how difficult it is to leave somewhere.
Molly Sears Pickavy is my guest on Life Stories this week. Travel writer and award-winning blogger, Molly is the definitive travel guide to Andalusia. Have you got a favourite place in Andalusia? Where is your all-time favourite place?
I'm not going to tell you, is that allowed?
Second, hold on.
Okay, well, the thing is, favourite places, I have a lot of favourite places, because, but I'm not dodging the question, really. The thing is, if it's winter, it's one place. If I'm with my family from the UK, it'll be another place. If I'm with my boyfriend, it's somewhere else. So I don't have, like, it's impossible to say one favourite place. But if I had to sum up a city, one of my most favourite places is Cadiz. And that's not the beaches or anything like that. It's the city of Cadiz. I adore it. Because, first, it's the oldest city in Spain, and some say
The Western world.
It's just got wonderful history, and I'm a bit of a history geek, which I didn't realise until now. Until all of this with the blog. I didn't even study history at school. Mm-hmm. So Cadiz. And also because it has this, the people of Cadiz, that it has this character. They are so, like, I don't know, just happy-go-lucky and fun and courteous and attentive. The waiters of Cadiz, there's no other waiter like that in the whole of Spain. I just adore it.
Why do you think Cadiz is not or has not been a major tourist destination? I find that fascinating.
Yeah, for me that is such a simple question, because if you just get a map and you take a map of Spain or a map of Andalusia and you look at Cadiz, and it's impossible to get to. It's like on a hook of land, and to get to it you have to drive really it takes a long time to get there. There's no airport there. The nearest airport is really far away. People fly into Malaga or people fly into Seville. And from the UK, Seville flights, there aren't many. So mainly you fly into Malaga. To get from Malaga to Cadiz, that's a really long time. So that naturally cuts it off. And the road connections, yeah, it's a long way from everywhere else. So basically it's the beach for Seville.
What does the future hold for you here, do you think?
I would love to know. At the moment, for the near future, in the short term, I'm launching these different tourist businesses and continuing with my blog. And I'm really enjoying what I'm doing at the moment. It's good fun and I seem to be making good progress. And most importantly, I'm enjoying it. But in the midterm, the long term, right now, I really don't know. It's open, wide open.
And do you still find things to explore? And do you still find things to excite you here?
Yes. Yeah, really, very much so. There are things that people, like authorities, are putting into value that they didn't realise they had. Sometimes there might be something that's privately owned that, like something archaeological or something historical that's privately owned that you can't go to, and all of a sudden, I don't know, the property changes hands or it becomes that there's a problem with it and they have to look after it and the private owners aren't doing that correctly, so it comes into the hands of the state or the local authority, and then they refurbish it or they prepare it for a public visit, for example. So there's always things, it's a changing panorama. There's always things coming up that maybe before, I mean, in Seville, I've mentioned Seville, there's the Casa Pilatos that was opened, I think, about 6 months ago or 8 months ago, that we couldn't visit that before.
Is your blog then, and it sounds very much as if it is, driven by your unerring enthusiasm for everything Andalusian rather than it's becoming a job?
I would say so. And if I confess the secret, the blog is almost like my notebook, and it's where I learn things. So sometimes I get comments from my readers who will say, oh, that's so fascinating, I really enjoyed reading that. the thing is, it's my thought process. Often it's something, I'm reading a book, I'm making a visit, I'm taking photos, and throughout this process it might take 3 or 4 months, and then I collate my ideas and I write them in this blog post, and it's almost, to me, the end of a process. So I've learned about this thing, I've studied it, I've come out with information in English, in Spanish, whatever, all mixed up, and then I put it, documented my thought pattern and the ideas on an article on the blog, and it's finished. For me, it's finished. For the reader, it's new.
If anybody wants to read the blog, how can they find it?
Okay, my blog link is www.piccavey.com, so that's piccavey.com, and across social media it's all the same, so Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, everything is piccavey.
Great. Okay, we've all but run out of time, Molly, so what is your last piece of music?
This is my memory of a concert that I went to in Barcelona, and it's Lucy Silvers and Antonia Orozco. So that's a British singer and a Spanish singer, both really well known. And the song is called What You're Made Of.
Molly Sears-Picavy, thank you so much for being my guest and for sharing your life story. Thank you very much.
Thank you.